All right, peace, family. Welcome once again to another episode of the Tech Building Podcast. When the devil tries to keep you down, you always show up with a strategy. I got to put the disclaimer out there. Well, first I'll say this. This is another topic. Like, I feel like I want to talk about all the topics I talk about, but this one, I felt like I had to. The GOAT conversation, I also felt like I had to. And this is another one where I really feel like not only do I want to talk about it, I have to talk about it. And so I will say the disclaimer is I'm a lot about this subject annoys me. A lot about this gets on my nerves, but I won't be angry, but I'm pretty sure my voice is going to raise because I'm naturally loud, but a lot about this gets on my nerves, but I got to get right into it. So when we're talking about the anatomy of greatness in this episode, and this really means a lot to me because it's been a very big part of my life as far as, you know, dealing with competition, things like that, and wanting to be great in the culinary field. And really the admiration that we have for people that are great. And I think to a degree, let me go back to what I want to talk about, then I'll get back to what I was going to say. So the definition of the word great is of an extent, amount, or intensity considerably above the normal or average. I'll read it one more time. Of an extent, amount, or intensity, considerably above the normal or average. Some of the synonyms are considerable, substantial, pronounced, sizable, significant, appreciable, serious, extraordinary, stupendous, unlimited, boundless. Then it also says, of ability, quality, or eminence considerably above the normal or average. Again, synonyms are prominent, eminent, preeminent, important, distinguished, august, illustrious, noble, celebrated, noted, notable. I felt that the synonyms were relevant in this context. So we're talking about the anatomy of greatness. I really just want to get into the components of this thing. And so, why do we love greatness? I was, you know what I'm saying, we as a culture, but I'm like speaking, answering for myself. The reason why I feel like I and we as a culture love greatness is because I think it's a part of our nature. We like to see people overcoming, you know, great odds, the feeling of, you know, victory, triumph, things of that nature. And we like to see that over, you know, a period of time. I think that also goes into greatness is, you know, performing at a certain level, achieving at a certain level over a given amount or an extended amount of time. And I think it's just a very appreciative or praiseworthy part of culture. And I wanted to say, you know, maybe slightly tilted towards masculinity, which has something to do with testosterone, but I will just say, you know, male and female, we like to see greatness personified, you know, in a human being for those reasons. And so what I think is a major component in what makes something or someone or an act great is really the operation in restraint. And what I mean by that is when we're watching like the Olympics, we're watching, I think about like gymnastics, or I think about, you know, divers, Olympic divers. We're watching them and they have a limited amount of time due to gravity to perform, to execute the different twists and flips and spins, things like that, and, you know, dive in the water in a certain kind of way, operating in that limited amount of time. And there's a lot of nuance and detail that goes on in that. Same thing with gymnastics. You know, they jump in, they're doing a different kind of flips and things. They're operating on the pommel horse. You understand what I'm saying? All of these things have to be done in a certain amount of strength, restraint due to human limitations. So when you're able to see somebody do all of these magnificent things with the limitations of the human body, you're like, man, that was great. This person, the splash that this person created was very minimal. The amount of turns and things that they were able to do in that given amount of time, man, that was really great. That was awe-inspiring, et cetera, et cetera. That is a part of what makes something great. And I'll also add to that, you know, manifesting a person's God-given talent and ability, bringing that to the forefront. You know, I think about rap. When you think about a great verse or a great song, a person is taking what is in their mind and in a creative, artistic way, putting it together in a rhythmic way. And also, again, you're operating in the restraint of, I mean, it has to rhyme, you know, and it can't just be too overly simplistic. There are a lot of things that make it, has a difficulty factor to it. And now, again, I will also add that the difficulty factor when it comes to performance or executing a task, the difficulty factor gives it the prestige in what we're talking about. You know, I remember when LeBron said, you know, when he beat the Warriors, him and his team beat the Warriors, and he was down 3-1. He was like, you know, I felt that made me the greatest of all time. Because I would imagine he's looking at the difficulty factor that came with that task, with that objective. He had to go through the difficulty in order to be able to achieve what he was desirous of, you know? So the operation in restraint, time, human limitation, dealing with manifesting a person's God-given ability, again, whether that be in sports or, you know, in any field of human endeavor, and then also difficulty factor. These kinds of things are what contribute to when we're representing or when we are witnessing what we understand as greatness. It's what makes it what it is, or helps contribute to what it is. I think these are the components of why we look at and why we appreciate greatness. And so also, when we're talking about operating in restraint, I think this is also, it's adjacent, but I think it's a bit different when we're talking about the adherence to principle. And one of the first things that jumps to my mind again is when we're talking about hip hop. I remember, again, I was born in 89, and I remember, you know, very early on in my development, listening to hip hop, things of that nature, like being original was a very significant deal. You could be, you know, the nicest, wittiest, most intelligent person, but if you weren't original, you was, as they were saying back then, biting somebody else's style, taking somebody else's, even their image. You were not looked at in a prestigious way or in an honorable way or a high esteemed sort of way if you're not being original. Again, back in the early hip hop days, it was really about who was the most intelligent. That was a part of what made somebody get or attain a certain level of credibility or accolades. You couldn't just get up there and rap about any old thing. It had to be, again, structured in a certain kind of way, put together in a certain kind of way that demonstrated a certain level of intelligence. So, I mean, again, we talk about in basketball, you can't just get the ball, hold the ball, not dribble it, and just walk down the court. You know, you have to abide by certain rules that when you become a master of the rules, it really, again, shows people, man, this person is a master of this craft. This person has put a lot of dedication and time into mastering, honing the craft, honing his or her skills to be at this level. Again, these things are, I think, are the components of what and why we appreciate greatness to the level that we do. And so I will say before I go in further, I think now, 2024, we're really dealing with, on many different levels in many different areas of life, we're dealing with a departure from the adherence to principle. And also the appreciation for nuance, detail, the critical thinking aspect of greatness as far as a person as a spectator, you know? But the departure from the necessity for the adherence to principle. I'm going to digress really quick. I am happy that Allah blessed me to not record this when I really wanted to record it and gave me a little bit of time to calm down, because at the time when the thoughts were coming to my mind, I was very, you know, I would say turned up, you know, but I'm happy that I'm able to talk about it in a calm way. Thank Allah for that. So there is a departure from my observation from what makes something what it is. And I love to use battle rap as a great analogy for this thing, but I could also, you know, do football, other different kind of, I mean, even the culinary arts, I could use that as an example. But I like to use hip hop because I really love it, but two, because I think it really thoroughly demonstrates when we're talking about the departure, when you have something in its inception or in its early development, we are drawn to this thing based on, again, these principles, these tenets: originality, intelligence, creativity, you know, creative expression. These things are what helps, or in the beginning, early stages, before anybody, you know, was really talking about it, especially on a large scale, it's what made this thing attractive. Like in battle rap, it was, okay, you from this block, you nice. Okay, I know my man's in them from this block, he nice. If y'all see each other, you battle on the spot. I have to put out another disclaimer that this episode might be a little bit longer because I really feel like I have to walk this down very carefully. So that was one of the things, like I said, in battle rap, where it's like two people, it wasn't a whole lot of politics involved in a person being willing to demonstrate their skill. And before I go any further with that, I do acknowledge the element of business. And this is why I've always said that, like, money and art don't really mix, because art you're doing, really, you do it for free if you love the art that you're trying to produce. But like the business part of it, there's more obligatory rules that we have to follow in order for something to function properly in business. So I think the two worlds don't necessarily mix, but we do put them together because it's great to make money off something that you love and art that you love to produce. But I think there are certain elements that don't jive well, and it creates an opportunity for, again, the degradation for the love of the craft, what we're trying to produce, to appease more of the business and the monetary side of what we're trying to do. I wanted to be clear about that. And so going along in the battle rap analogy, or the understanding, originality, again, was a very significant, prominent element to being what it is to be a great battler. Also, it was really about lyricism. Again, creative expression, intellectual composition. This was what, like, it really was about bars. That's what early battling was really about. There was no, you know, stage with, you know, a few thousand people in there where we began to calculate performance. So as battle rap began to develop, and I will probably just fast forward to what we're talking about now. When we are observing battle rap, you begin to see a certain kind of change where people talk about, again, now it's like, okay, you have a battle. I believe this brother's passed away. If so, you know, may Allah be pleased with our brother, Tech N9ne. You have people like Head Ice, people like Hitman Holla, you know, even Briz Rothstein, where you began to look at not only their, I mean, really specifically, we're talking about like Tech N9ne. He was not known to be a lyricist, but he was, you know, very funny, very like, you know, theatrical. And the other components of what he brought to battle rap is what helped catapult him to a certain, you know, status level. So we began to calculate or to take into our, how we felt about it, you know, performance. All right, so, okay, so now the bars is not just the only thing that can help you win a battle, which again, I'm cool with that. What I love about Allah is the different ways that he's able to manifest his own greatness. It doesn't have to be this one specific type of way in order for something to be great. You have a like a Steph Curry and you have a LeBron. Two completely different players, but manifesting greatness on the same type of level, same type of tier. So then you had the growth of the platform. Now, instead of just being on like on a little street corner with maybe a few, you know, 100 people out there, 100 or so people out there, now you're on a stage, and like I said, it's a few thousand people, you know, in the venue. Now we have the person that comes to my mind is like a person like Hitman Holla or Tsunami Surf, where now you're saying like, how did this person captivate the crowd? Their performance. Now we're adding these things to the perspective or interpretation of what makes something great or acceptable or exceptional. Again, this is more than fine for me, because you can't rap the same for 50 people as you do 100 people. That's for a conversation at a different time, podcast episode for a different time. But it's fine. That's fine with me. I really have no issue with that, because again, the evolution of a thing and the different ways of manifestation of a thing, I think, is a part of witnessing Allah's greatness. Now, here is where it gets, where I said the departure from principle. So originally, and I'm not saying that I'm mentioning every single component and all that, but I'm talking about the main principles of what we're talking about in battle rap, what made it this attractive, you know, sport, if you will. And we're talking about originality and lyricism. In battle rap today, you know, we have a lot of very similar, it's like battle rap kind of got boiled down to being very formulaic, you know, where it's like you have this particular style. I've called it crescendo rap, where it's like you're writing in this certain kind of style where you're writing kind of uphill, like a roller coaster, and you're trying to build it up. You're trying to build up this momentum and energy in your bars. And I think a brother like New Jersey Twerk is a good example of this writing style, where you're writing in a build-up kind of a way, and then at the crest, you have your crescendo. You have your big punchline, and it's like, boom, you know, crowd goes crazy type. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're a person like, again, there's like a lot of people started doing that, and it kind of became the URL or the battle rap formula. And so if you're a person like a Loaded Lux or a Murder Mook or like a Cassidy, you know, there are others, But if you were a person like that and you're writing your material not to fit a certain formula, but you're trying to be yourself. And really, as an artist, I feel like to a degree, you want to kind of go against what everybody else is doing. That's just my personal feeling, you know, as a creative, as an artist. I don't want to do exactly what everybody else is doing because I'm me. Again, we're talking about being original. You understand what I'm saying? So those people like Loaded Lux, like Mook, and like others like them, they would not get the same type of reaction from the crowd that the crescendo rap artists would. Because again, the hip hop fan base have been conditioned to accept this style of rap. I mean, because it's great. It's like you're on a ride, you know? Building up energy, big punchline, boom. You understand what I'm saying? And performance began to be almost appearing as equal to lyricism, creativity, you know, bars and whatnot. And this is where I think this is a problem, because this thing that came after cannot weigh or be more important than the foundational principle. And if we choose to do that, this is what we see, and people can ignore this or look down on this or say that it's not true or this, this, and that. I'm a person that when I was really in the battle rap culture heavy, I was watching all the battles. I was watching all the blogs, you know, reviews, videos, and I was watching all or listening to all the podcasts. I was spending a lot of time consuming battle rap content. And I began to see, like, battle rap, you know, was at like a high point. And I feel like now in 2024, I'm recording this on May 6th, 2024, battle rap seems to be tapering on the downward end. And there's some evidence to prove it. And I don't even want to get into all that. But from my perspective, battle rap is on a decline. Same thing can be said for hip hop, but again, I want to stick to one thought train here. And I believe that it is due in part to our departure from what makes the thing good in the first place. And the reason why we do things like that, and I'm just using this as an example, where you have a person like Hitman Holla, who's from St. Louis, Missouri. And if I'm from St. Louis, and this is somebody who, you know, we rock with, but his thing is not lyricism per se, not saying the Hitman don't got bars, but his thing is really more performance, crowd control, things of that nature. When I watch his battle, let's say he battles, I don't think this battle's ever happened, but let's say he battles Loaded Lux, you know? And Lux's thing is more, let's just call it foundational. He's from more of the foundational elements of hip hop, battle rap. So as I'm watching the battle, I'm seeing that Lux is doing, you know, doing the typical thing. Checking the boxes of what makes a great battler, original bars, you know, lyrical, intellectual lyrical composition. And then I'm watching my man, if I'm from St. Louis, Hitman Holla, again doing a great job, but not in those same type ways, like dealing with performance, things of that nature. So now what I'm saying is, myself as a battle rap fan, if both people, let's say both people perform on a 10, let's just say that. The performance, you know, as we talk about in battle rap, we're talking about angles, talking about crowd control, delivery. Both people are performing at a 10. Then you got Loaded Lux great lyrical composition, great delivery, great, you know, concepts, things of that nature, schemes, all those kind of things like that that go in the lyricism category. I'm going to give the edge to the person that is, again, doing the thing that makes what this thing is great, which weighs more. That just makes typical, or that just makes clear sense to me. When you're making a great dish, taste is most important. It's not the only thing that's important. But does the dish taste good? So you can have the, you know, best plating, best techniques, you know, you're doing some gastronomy, you're being avant-garde, doing things that are cutting edge. But if the dish doesn't taste good, all of those things, you know, all those other things fall by the wayside to a degree. Now, on the opposite, if a person doesn't have all the greatest techniques and all the different kind of things like that, but if the dish tastes really good, then that person is going to get the edge, because that's what we're really here for. Man, I really hope that that makes sense. So what we do as fans is, because we like Hitman, or we're from St. Louis, or we're not from, you know, the environment of hip hop where bars are most important, we will begin to separate. Oh, no, I think Hitman got that because, nah, did you see how he did that remix in round two and made the crowd go crazy? Lux ain't made the crowd go crazy all like that throughout the whole battle. He didn't have a moment bigger than what Hitman had in the battle. You listen to great commentary on great rappers. You talk about this thing of, yo, I had to rewind these bars. Or, I mean, and I'm pretty sure any hip hop fan will tell you, there are probably lines that came from songs that came out, you know, probably some decades ago, some years ago, that you will probably put on tomorrow and you will catch something for the first time. That goes into what makes this thing great. We have to look at ourselves. And am I saying, what is my motivation behind, and what is my emotion behind saying why this thing is the way that it is? And so this is what I believe contributes to the devaluing of the prestige of greatness. And again, if you look at, and I've heard a brother say this to me before, again, in the battle rap space, you don't have another Sue Surf or a Tay Rock or a, you know, Mook, Lux, you know, T-Top, Briz Rothstein. You don't have another K-Shine or another, as the brother was saying, like another superstar on that caliber, because we're not adhering to the principles of what made the thing what it is. But we're giving people who are not adhering to the principle, the principles, the same level of credit, admiration, respect as people that are doing that. Again, this weakens the fabric of the things that we love. I think it's very unwise to do this as a culture. And again, you see it in sports, you see it in hip hop, see it in battle rap. I mean, again, you see it in the culinary arts. Now it's like, you go on TikTok, everybody think that they know how to cook. I'm not going down that lane, but I'm just saying, we as Black people don't really know how to really cook. I'm gonna say that for another time. But I really want to just drive home that point of, when you separate from principle, when you separate from standard, things begin to degrade. The fabric of things begin to degrade, even down to, we're talking about manhood. Wanting to be all inclusive, everybody getting a participation award. These things take away from greatness. And it's ours. This is not something that other people have control of. This is these are things that go on in our culture. And so, moving on, one of the things I'm talking about with the measurement of greatness is opposition. You know, they say in boxing, you can't beat a champ unless you beat the champ, you know? Or if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, you know? The opposition, it goes in what I talked about in the beginning of the difficulty factor in which when you go through something really allows you to get the proper perspective on the achievement. If you just, I mean, listen, I got to say this. I got to say it. Hopefully I can just, it can be done. Because it does bother me. I love Odell Beckham Jr. because he is my brother. Odell Beckham Jr., the person, I have 0% problem with. But Odell Beckham Jr., the football player, I don't like. Allah forgive me, you know, if that's not the way I should feel about it, but that's the God's honest truth. The football player, I don't like. And I believe Odell Beckham Jr., the football player, is an example of what I mean of difficulty factor via opposition. I remember when, I know if Frank listened to this, he's going to crack up, but I got to say it. Salute my bro Frank real quick. I remember when Odell was on the Giants. You know, we still had Eli as a quarterback, whatnot. And this was the year, the infamous game between the Giants and Panthers when the Panthers had Josh Norman. They going back and forth, you know, which I thought was great. You know what I mean? I thought it was great. And this was the year, I believe at the time, the Panthers were either, I think they were, I feel definitely confident they were undefeated. And they had between 13 and 15 wins. And I think they were either undefeated or they only had one loss at the time. So again, yeah, they're going back and forth, great hype, everything's going, you know what I mean? Gearing up for a great game. Very early on in the game, first quarter, I believe it was the Giants' first possession. Odell Beckham Jr. gets completely wide open on a post route very early on in the game. It's 0-0. Wide open. And Eli, again, a much maligned, you know, quarterback. The countdown to the Hall of Fame for Eli. Anyway. Odell Beckham Jr. gets a great pass, drops the ball. And I remember he's telling the crowd, you know, shh, calm down. You know, it's my fault, X, Y, and Z, you know, whatever. But he drops the ball. It would have been a walk-in easy touchdown, put the Giants up 7-0. Anybody that knows anything about football, you know that, and especially in big games, you got to capitalize on all opportunities. They might not come back around again. And this is when I've studied Eli so much. He was in his rare playoff form in the regular season. And then Odell went on in the rest of that game to really, you know, have a meltdown. It late hits Josh Norman. It got, like, ugly after that, you know? After he had a meltdown. Then I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the same season. I believe he made the playoffs. And his first playoff game was against the Green Bay Packers. And again, this was, we had Eli, whole shebang. And this was the infamous Giants boat trip, you know, where it was like OBJ, Shep, Victor Cruz, you know, a bunch of New York Giants players went out on a little, it was like a yacht or something like that, you know, it was a nice size boat, whatever it was. I don't remember the exact thing, but it's like an infamous picture. And I remember you know, at the time, talking to my sister and my bro at the time, and I'm like, bro, this is not something that you do, you know, right before a playoff game. I mean, you definitely didn't see Eli on the boat. I don't think Eli would have went anyway, but and then I believe like Ray Lewis came out, you know, was talking about, hey, I don't know about that, doesn't look good, X, Y, and Z. And I remember my sister and my bro at the time, this is my bro still, they were like, oh man, you know, just let him go ahead and do, you know, he's a young guy, whatever the case may be, X, Y, and Z, whatever. This is the point I'm really, really, really trying to drive home. We know and we understand what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's not, what's beneficial and what's not. But do we choose to adhere to the principle? Allah, please help me get this. I got to get this right. I want to get this right. Are we willing to adhere to the principle, the difficulty factor, the sacrifice that it takes to achieve greatness? Oh, yo, Tony, he's a 21-year-old guy. However old Odell was at the time. Oh, it's fine. Okay. All right. Odell had probably, even still to this day, it was his worst game ever. Allah, forgive me. I got to say this. This is why I will never forgive Odell Beckham Jr., the player. I believe he robbed the Giants of their third title with Eli Manning at quarterback. I've watched and studied Eli so much. I'm watching Eli in that game, and we were getting ready to go on a run. It was getting ready to go down. And Odell Beckham was dropping passes, dropping a touchdown pass, dropping a third down pass. And we're not talking about, you know, a pass that, you know, is off target or whatever the case may be. We're talking about through the hands for a touchdown, for a first down, extending the drive, X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, bro. And, you know, of course, my sister and my bro, they, you know, they like, you know, head down, you know, shaking their head. And I'm like, bro, this is what I'm talking about. This is what Ray Lewis is talking about. This is what people are talking about. But we want to make concessions. We want to make room. We want to be all inclusive. Greatness is not all inclusive. It's just not. As the saying goes, if it was easy, everybody be doing it. If the Hall of Fame was easy, everybody be in the Hall of Fame. If to be great was easy, everybody be great. When it was at the time, you know, the Browns weren't a great team at the time when OBJ was on the Giants. He had crushed the Browns. He had crushed a bad team. He'd go crazy. Some of his best highlights were against bad teams. But in the big moments, and again, I'm speaking to myself. This is how significant and real it is for me. You can do whatever you want to do when it's no pressure. And that's cool. A lot of people look great when there's no pressure. But when it's a big moment, when it's time for you to manifest your greatness, greatness is not manifest in ease. We're talking about the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, that the woman suffers the equivalent pain of death to bring forth new life and child. Greatness is manifest through difficulty. So when you're faced with a difficult moment, brother Odell Beckham, you folded. That's what that is. Let me move on from Odell Beckham, my brother, who I love. making concessions for people that we like is a problem. If we look at the state of where we are today as a society, these things apply. What I'm saying, what I'm talking about is applying. So I want to go ahead and move on and get ready to close out. But this segment is going to be, you know, I'm not done yet, but I'm winding it down. When we're looking at this Kendrick Lamar and Drake, you know, beef situation, hip hop battle situation, however you want to, whatever nomenclature you want to go with, is another, yet again, prime example of what I'm talking about. I might come back to this, but I'm going to say in this episode, I might do a part two of this subject matter. Drake is my brother. I have no problem with Drake, the man, or really, honestly, the artist, to be completely honest. But I have to say this. The conversation around, you know, Rick Ross calling Drake white boy, you know, Kendrick calling Drake, you know, colonizer, it's being misunderstood what we're talking about. This is not a racial issue what we're talking about, or why it comes about around Drake's name. Hip-hop is about authenticity. That's what hip-hop is about. It's about authenticity. When it comes to Drake, out of his own mouth, he has not lived the life that he is portraying in his music. Oh, well, Tone, nobody, you know, it's a whole lot of rappers out there that's not living their lyrics. Fair. No problem. I don't know Kendrick, Rick Ross, Styles P, or, you know, many of the other artists I listen to. I don't know these people personally. They all could be lying. But the separating factor is, if you're looking at it in the midst or in the category of acting, some actors like Denzel, Viola Davis, Will Smith, and others, when you're watching them, Jamie Foxx, especially in the movie Ray, when you're watching them, they make you feel like they're not acting. You really thought Jamie Foxx was Ray Charles. Watching Denzel and many of the movies that he's played in, Malcolm X, Equalizer, or you can just run down the list. You feel like they are that person. Even though we know that they not. It's a movie. So in the context of hip hop, if you make me believe that your character is what this character is, I don't have no problem with it. Because at the end of the day, I don't know if you really doing this or not. And I don't really have the proof to say whether or not you're really living this life or not. So I have to look at it in the context of acting. So when I'm listening to Drake, I'm like, first it was the ghostwriting thing. That's a strike at your originality. Hip hop is the most, in my opinion, life expressive. When you're listening to R&B or, you know, a more vocal heavy, even though hip hop is vocal heavy, but we're talking about a vocal heavy genre like R&B, where I'm listening to Beyonce or, you know, Alicia Keys or whomever. I mean, Beyonce could be singing about ketchup packets. But it's her voice that makes it attractive, what makes it sound really good. When you're listening to jazz or rock and roll, a more instrumentation heavy genre of music. Man, okay, this person's a great guitar player, great drummer, great this or that. I'm listening to it for those components. But when I'm listening to hip hop, and I feel like this is more objectively a fact, I'm listening to the person tell their story. I'm listening to you express your life. So it's coming out that's like, Drake, bro, you take other people's songs. I used to listen to So Far Gone all the time. I used to listen to Take Care all the time. This is the God's honest truth. As a hip-hop fan, as a man, I remember Murder Mook said, if you can't be a man, I can't be a fan. That's a fact. I'll come back to that, inshallah. When I'm hearing the reference tracks from brother, Quentin Miller, I'm like, man, that's not good. You taking people's songs, bro? What's going on? Then information is coming out about the Weeknd wrote X amount of percentage of Take Care. I'm like, what? I use this example. I said, okay, imagine now, I use my bro Dre as an example. I'm like, salute my bro. And I'm like, yo, imagine if I come to your house. I'm a chef. I come to your house and I go in your kitchen and a meal is produced. Menu is produced, a meal is produced. And I come out and you think that I made it. You and your wife are like, oh man, Tony, you did a great job making this meal. You did a great job coming up with this menu. Everything was great. And then it comes out, sometime later that I didn't cook any of the food. Or I just helped plate the food. I might have just, sauteed it up, heated it up. You would look at me different. But she's like, man, bro, I gave you credit for, I thought you really made this. I thought you really created this menu. You didn't write the raps. What are you really here for? You didn't cook the dish. What are you really here for? I want to see the person that made the dish. So it had an effect on Drake's originality in my mind, really, to cut it short. Then it was like, Drake's from Canada. Before TikTok, I ain't know nothing about Canada. When I started getting on TikTok, I'm watching some of these, Canadian TikTok creators, and they're using a thing like Crody and cheesing and using a different Canada or Canadian slang. I never heard Drake use any Canadian slang. That didn't make any sense to me. Then it was like, all right, you're speaking and talking like you're from Atlanta, using Atlanta slang and sound. Shout out my, he was in on the Versace remix. Shout out my something that he said, shout out my bros that trap out the bando. You don't talk like that. Then it was like, you from London, using London slang. Then you making all, a lot of the great R&B or melodic type music. Then it's, if you're reading this too late, I'm Sixth God. Now I'm like a trap artist. I'm like, well, what's going on? The reason why I even have a question in my mind is because the tenet or the principle in hip hop is authenticity. You hear Queens Flip say all the time, I'm from Queens. Biggie Smalls get an award. Brooklyn, stand up. We're talking about being an authentic person in your music professional career. Jay-Z and Biggie Smalls make a song, Brooklyn's Finest. Bro, represent where you're from. That's why Joe Budden said on his diss track to Drake, the owl is perfect for you. We don't know who you are. I don't know who you are. That's a problem in hip hop. Because this is our thing. This is what makes our thing great. And you're not being original, bro. Like, you're taking these people's sound. And you're taking people's songs. Now I'm like, why am I listening to Drake? Because he got cool swag? Because he's light skinned? Because he, I don't know. If you're not writing the music and you're not being who you are, what is the reason why I'm listening to your music? I'm not going to keep belaboring this. I'm just trying to lay it out there. So now when we're talking about the Kendrick Lamar and Drake hip hop battle beef, however you want to put it, you have music like Kendrick's verse on like that. Hold on. I got to go back real quick. The reference tracks come out for Against Drake, whatnot. Oh, Tone, everybody has taken somebody's song, or, you know, everybody's done what Drake has done. He's not the first person to do that. Two things. Let's go with the surface part of that first. And we riding in a caravan, and we all doing 100. We're doing 150. Speed limit is 80. And you get pulled over, and then you like, dang, oh, well, all these people was doing it too. There's a word for that. That's number one. Then number two, I don't know all of the other people that you're talking about that have the same thing. If a reference track come out for Jay-Z tomorrow where he steals somebody's whole song, stealing somebody's whole verse, whatnot, it's going to immediately change the way that I look at Jay-Z or whomever that I like to listen to. That's the point. And then for us to not look at the violation of our principle as that and to say, well, I like the song anyway. Excuse me. I'm still going to rock out with it anyway. It's like, okay, again, you do what you want to do. But it's the weakening of our culture that I have a problem with. So now we're talking about the hip hop battle beef. And you have songs from Kendrick like That, Euphoria, 616 in LA, Meet the Grams, and Not Like Us. And then you have from Drake, I believe, you have Push Ups, Tailor Made. I think I'm missing one in there, but then I think it's Family Matters. And I think I'm missing one in there somewhere. Then he has The Heart Part 6. If we're looking at, again, the principles of hip hop, song making, lyricism, the whole shebang, it's not even a comparison. I'm going to digress really quick before I go back to that. On the Joe Budden podcast, Ish was he was salty. They were talking about 616 in LA, and they were going over the many different, you know, potential interpretations of what the 616 could mean and all those kind of different kind of things like that. And Ish was, you know, he was getting salty about it. Kind of saying like people are, I'm paraphrasing him. I'm kind of like using my own language to interpret what he was talking about. He's like, well, people are just attaching all this, these disparate things to this one person and attributing to Kendrick Lamar's genius. But to me, that's what makes Kendrick Lamar, a part of what makes Kendrick Lamar the so-called quote unquote boogeyman. Because if you're Kendrick's enemy or, you know, his opposition in a battle rap situation, you can't tell what is planned and what's not planned. So you're kind of racking your brain to sit back and say, okay, well, then how do I approach this person? How do I attack this person? did he mean this? Did he mean that? You kind of go crazy, rack your brain. That's a part of being a great artist. So if you're listening to these songs, again, with an objective understanding of what hip-hop is and what makes a great hip-hop song, a great hip-hop song, that's why I said in, I think I said this in the Anatomy of Conversation, what makes a great French fry, with these things are like already known. Crispiness, saltiness, you know what I mean? Those are probably the main two things. Then you probably have some other type of components in there. But if a French fry is like, you know, hot and crispy, salty, crispy on the outside, salt on the inside, pretty sure that it's probably a great fry. Now, you can get into some nuance of what separates, you know, two great fries that have all those things involved with it. But if somebody was like trying to put a cold French fry in that mix, calling it great, you'd be like, well, that's not really what it is. That's not what makes it what it is. The way you're doing splits where your pants might rip. The Dave Free line from Family Matters. It's like, bro, these things are not good. Why am I sitting back and saying, why am I even comparing these two things? If a person was on, you know, a cooking competition, and a person, again, the flavor is there, food tastes good, great technique, great plating, great concept, great menu design. And then you have another person coming up and sitting back with a like a bowl of Captain Crunch. And then what we're doing is, well, this bowl of Captain Crunch is really tasty. It's like, bro, really? We're comparing a bowl of Captain Crunch to a 3 Michelin star dish that tastes good? Why? It takes away and it diminishes like the quality of a song like 616 in LA. That diminishes when we're talking about a song like Euphoria. With the creativity and the sound and the lyrical composition and the whole shebang. To compare that to TaylorMade Freestyle? For the sake of what? Because we like Drake? That's not good. I feel like Drake and LeBron James are the poster boys for the decline of the prestige of greatness. Because we want to applaud them. We want to put them on this pedestal. For many various of reasons that I'm frankly not mad at. But greatness and prestige is not all inclusive. We want to call them the GOAT. Player, you know, all time, top rap artist all time. Bro, that comes with stuff. We're in a very, it's kind of like a soft mentality way of life. And I'm not going to get into all this, but it's like, then you look at the result in our society. Look at the laundry list of metabolic problems that we're going through as black people. Because we have poor diet. Look at the divorce rate and the poor relationships that we're going through. You go on any social media, you hear about black male-female relationships. Because we're not adhering to principle. We're taught by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that the first law of the universe is motion. The second law of the universe is order. If you're moving in disorder, then you're moving towards the death of the thing. Difficulty factor, adhering to principle, operating in restraint. These are the components of greatness. But we're taking that away because of emotional for whatever reason. It's just not good. And it's our thing. This is what we have made. We have made great. I mean, with hip hop, we made this thing. It has an effect in the world of sport and play, and it for surely has an effect in our reality. It definitely, like, this whole thing is easily translatable into real life, what we're talking about. But I'm keeping it in this realm because these are things that I love. Watching Eli Manning and the Giants beat the undefeated Patriots. Shoot, even watching LeBron James beat the Golden State Warriors down 3-1. But these are the things that make these moments what they are. It's not going to happen for everybody. Let's just be intelligent, man. Let's just be intelligent thinking people. Let's be fair thinking people. Let's just be fair. I'm going to go ahead and close out right there. I appreciate anybody that made it this far. I may do a part two of this subject matter because I feel like there is a more social element to this aspect of colorism and racism going on and really dealing with competition. But I may do that, or it may just be under a different title. But again, I thank you for anybody that made it this far. I appreciate it. It's another episode of Tech Building Podcast. When the devil tries to keep you down, you always show up with the strategy. Peace.